Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, July 23rd, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 172. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and joining me today, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, hello.
Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
Rob Zachney.
Hello.
And the clouds. That's right, I've invited the clouds here.
Hello.
Obviously, I know a lot of people have questions. You've been, I'm sure all of you listening at home have been following hashtag CloudGate very closely, and I have good news. They fixed the clouds.
They have silver lining.
They fixed them. They move now, and they look like clouds, I guess.
Oh.
So last week, you may recall that Patrick and I did an interview with Sean Murray from Hello Games, developer of No Man's Sky. And one of the things that people really – one of the things we talked about were – how that team was often accused of being liars. They were accused of being liars.
Oh, thieves.
And thieves. Also thieves, both. And were also dirty liars and deceivers and all sorts of things. And as if on call, as if like timed to perfection, an element of the No Man's Sky community. So No Man's Sky Next leaked over the weekend because,
yes,
like, Walmart and mom-and-pop shops got copies in for the Xbox One.
Which is physical, yeah.
Well, it's a physical copy because it's the first time it's coming to that platform. And so it had at least some Next features baked into the disc, right? So it has third person.
Baked right in.
It has the freighter stuff baked in, right? There's still a big patch. A patch just hit, which I'll get to in a second. But I spent my weekend not having a good time and instead watching people upload and react to 10-minute long video leaks of No Man's Sky Next.
Yeah, that sounds. You know what? If someone was to make up a thing that Austin did over the weekend,
yeah,
like
that's it.
Sounds
it
close
sounds
enough.
Sounds like Austin.
I mean, it was so fascinating to see that community flip flop around as to whether or not Next was going to like save their lives or kill them and their families.
Yep. Because those are the two genders.
Right. That's it. Kill your family or be your perfect.
Be saved by clouds.
Be saved by clouds. Yeah,
yes,
exactly. And so it would be like a new animal type would show up. And for the first like six messages, it'd be like, oh man, this new animal is the best. And then a similar animal would show up in another video and be like, I can't believe there's only one animal in this game now. They only put one animal. No, they got rid of all the other animals. There's only one left in No Man's Sky. But the cloud thing was sincerely like, wait a second. These clouds don't look as good as they are in the trailer. They lied in the trailer again. And it's like, oh, are we really doing this? Are we really? It's like, yeah, we were. Because it was like, oh, okay, listen, this is only an Xbox. This is regular Xbox One. It's not an Xbox One X. So the guy who got the leak went out and bought an Xbox One X.
No.
So he could see if the clouds were the same as the trailer clouds in the Xbox One X.
He needed a 4K TV,
He did need a 4K TV, too. And also he was uploading at 720p. So who the fuck cares, right? It's just not. To the point where eventually he uploaded the video that looks just like a zoom in on the clouds. And there's debate about whether or not they're liars again, like I said. And then just now, as in the most important news, a 7-gig patch just hit the Xbox servers. Everybody downloaded it, and the first thing to go up, the first post-patch video to go up, was someone with a phone recording their TV with their phone as the I showed you this video as the clouds blew. Now, don't get me wrong, they're very nice clouds,
very pretty,
but I couldn't say for sure that they fixed the clouds. I don't know that they were broken to begin with. I think maybe you just can't tell in a thing if the clouds are the same or not.
You just got to play for yourself.
That's what I spent
it's
my
It's all one conspiracy to get you to play for yourself.
That's right.
So you buy the game.
So you have
and
to prove.
You buy an Xbox One X. And you buy a 4K TV.
Yeah.
It's all so you can see the good clouds.
I should be clear that I think That go ahead. Yeah, uh-huh. What's up, Patrick? Your head is in your hands.
Yeah. Not because of you. This is a good story. Not being sarcastic. This is rich and compelling and interesting.
I appreciate it.
The fuck are people doing with their time?
I don't fucking know. They're excited.
Like, what the fuck? It is interesting as a reflection of like a larger narrative related to No Man's Sky specifically. Like, it is interesting that this became a flashpoint.
Right.
Clouds.
And like, I want to be clear, like, the bulk of this community has been very interesting to follow and watch. And it has been, like, fascinating to see them react not just to clouds, but to things like the draw distance has changed in that game in a big way. It's gotten way better. And in a way that, you can see further. Gotcha. Sorry. Yes. You can. So a draw distance in a game is the distance at which something in the world, in the virtual world, draws into existence.
Gotcha.
It comes into existence.
Instead of popping in really abruptly, necessarily, something is already drawn so that you can see off further into the
distance. And that was a cool change, which I think for me and probably for a lot of fans from what the response I read was like, oh, wow, I was cool with the short draw distance of the original game because I still thought it was a cool game. But seeing the extra depth of, like, these asteroid fields or being able to see, like, where the other side of this lake turns back into a shore is, like, really appealing. And so following the fans around that stuff has been really cool. It's just, like, unbelievable that, like, and also just seeing people, like, extrapolate from things. Like, someone uploaded a menu that showed that, like, the multiplayer lobby had 16 spaces in it. And despite Sean Murray tweeting that the game was going to be focused on four-player co-op, they're like, oh, I guess it's going to be, like, four teams of four players doing PvP. I was like, he literally just tweeted that it's four-player co-op. And it's, like, seeing the people just find ways to extrapolate what their version of this game is. And maybe it will be. Maybe I'm wrong. But it's just so fascinating to watch the community. And I definitely get the excitement because I was there watching that same leaked footage. But
you were, yeah. Starting on Friday afternoon, you just started pasting things into our chat that made sense to none of us. But you were a very excited boy about a spaceman with lightning for head.
Yeah, he looks great. His head is lightning. Kato is shaking.
Oh yeah.
Kato is in this room and is doing. Yeah, it looks like a man who has lightning ball head. Oh man, there's a person who has a lightning ball head.
Sure, yeah.
And then two fancy like Beats by Dre headphones orbiting around the lightning ball head.
Space Beats by Dre.
Very good. I'm still excited about this. This comes out tomorrow. That's all I'm going to say about No Man's Sky for now. I can't promise I won't dip back in later. But that has been my weekend of following stuff. I'm curious what your weekends have been. If they could stack up to my week of reading Reddit and Reset Era threads. Reset Era.
I wish that Reset Era, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Yeah, I don't know either.
My head's in the clouds.
Did you visit
the clouds? No Man's Clouds.
This weekend? What did you do this weekend?
I did visit some clouds. I went to Fire Island. I went to a beach. There were clouds.
Is this a weed thing?
No.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, not on Fire Island. What are you doing on Fire Island?
I don't know. What are you doing?
There's only one bar.
Okay. Wasn't
Fire kicked out of that bar. What do you do? Yes.
Wasn't Fire Island like that like music festival that went to shit?
No, that was the Fire Fest. That was
okay. Yeah. But I'm not, ja okay, I'm not totally presents. Off base, right?
No, it was fire. There was a fire there. You know, like I understand where that could have happened. Yeah. That was nice. We only were on the beach for like half an hour because it was so windy. But there was some beach and there was like tooting around the island. There was a bird who needed to be rescued. My friend rescued a bird. You know, Polygon's own Simone de Rochefort rescued a little baby bird from a blueberry net nest. She grabbed it and like
from a blueberry net?
It was like the blueberry netting around a bush.
Oh, like to prevent birds from stealing the blueberries?
Yes, but it got stuck in it. Uh-huh. And then, you know, she took it very gently in her hands and then, like, just like that meme. And she just let it.
And she let it go.
She let it go. It was beautiful. It was very dramatic.
Fire Island is that really Long Island near, like, on Long Island, right?
Yes, but you have to take a ferry from Long Island to get to it.
Right.
Because it's right off.
Right. It's actually not on Long Island, I guess, technically. It's like across the way.
It's not a very big place, but it's delightful. You know, there's a lot of things like ice cream.
So there's one bar on that entire island?
There might be more than one.
Okay.
We just were theorizing, like, what do you do if you live on Fire Island and you get kicked out of that bar?
You have to get on the ferry,
go to Long Island, go to a bar there.
And hope the ferry keeps running after closing.
I hope it does.
I guess.
You know, we're near the city that never sleeps when you're over there, so. It's do.
Yeah, I guess so.
I played a game.
What'd you play?
I played Sonic Mania Plus, the actual Plus, even though I was playing the original Sonic Mania right after Plus came out. And then I started playing Plus, which has an encore mode with two new characters. That changes things up quite a bit because these new characters have very different abilities.
What is it? Who is it?
So it's Ray the Flying Squirrel.
Okay, so all right, I'm gonna be clear. I already have Sonic. Who is a blue hedgehog who runs fast.
Blue hedgehog who runs fast. It already has Miles Tails Prower.
Right, which is weird because the pun is in his regular name, not his nickname.
It didn't work all that well,
it's not Tails Miles Prower.
Right.
His name is just Miles Prower, which is already a goofy video game name. Yeah. And also, people in that world call him Tails.
Yeah, it's because he has a tail that, like, windmills, and Knuckles is, all three of them are in the original game. Yes, yeah. And he can climb things.
Right, with his Knuckles.
In the new game, in Plus, you can play Encore mode, which has, like, they sort of remix some of the colors around, which is nice. It's like, instead of being, for example, Emerald Hill Zone, which is always, like, blue skies, very sunny. It's now a beautiful sunset in the background of that, so that's very pretty. And there's two new characters. It's Ray the Flying Squirrel, who is a golden, beautiful squirrel who does kind of a... Do you know how the flying works in Super Mario World with a little... That little...
That's, like, remarkable.
Yeah?
That's the sound it makes.
Thank you.
I've been watching someone play through Super Mario World recently.
It's like that.
So it's the cape. It's the cape.
It's almost like the cape, but he obviously always has it because it's part of his body as a flying squirrel. But he kind of has that little – it does like a tiny dip and continues kind of flying. That kind of motion, that's his sort of special ability. And there's also Mighty, and I think he's also an echidna.
No. Try again.
Mighty the
– Keep trying. Keep guessing. I know this. I don't have to look it up.
Is he not a hedgehog?
No, he's not a hedgehog. How dare you? Look at him. Mighty what is that?
He looks a lot like Knuckles.
Oh my God, that's so rude.
Nope. Look, he has more of a ketchup color.
Also, Knuckles isn't even a hedgehog either.
No, he's an echidna.
Right.
But what the hell is Mighty?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't remember.
Guess. Look at him.
Mighty is a hamster.
Rob, did you have your hand up? Did you have a guess?
Oh, no. I was just rubbing my temples.
Groundhog?
I'm looking
Mighty the Groundhog. Get the fuck out of my room.
Hold on. Mighty Sonic Hedgehog.
I love this
Mighty
game.
Mighty
the...
It was in Knuckles and Chaotic?
Mouse?
I wouldn't get this one. That looks like a hedgehog.
He looks like a hedgehog, and he also looks a lot like Knuckles. In the sprites themselves, when you're playing the game, he looks a lot like Knuckles. I'm just saying. He has the same body type as Knuckles. He's, like, brawny and strong, and he has special abilities. He's immune to spikes.
Okay, so what in the real world is immune to spikes?
Armadillo?
Mighty the Armadillo.
Oh, my God,
That's what it was.
He's an armadillo.
Debuted in Chaotix featuring Knuckles the echidna. Welcome to the next level in 32X World for the 32X.
All right. Well, he also has a ground pound, which is really cool.
Just like a real armadillo.
He's
which
immune
is like
to spikes.
A Mario ground pound?
Yeah, very much so. He does like a little boop, boom.
Wait, so are these just two Mario characters that they built into Sonic? And just...
And boop.
Wow. Yeah. You have, like, a deep soundboard of Mario noises I didn't know you had.
Hidden talents.
The Mel Blanc of the Waypoint podcast.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you. The game is really great. It's really fun with the new characters. I'm enjoying playing with them, new mechanics with them.
So, yeah, I hit my microphone. I'm so excited. Are there new levels and stuff, or is it just new variations on the old levels?
It's just new variations of the old levels, but the characters are pretty different. So, you know, I'm actually finding very new routes that I didn't go through using Sonic or using Tails, basically. Cool. Especially with Ray, because he can obviously do the cool thing.
Right.
And also, it's slightly different, very, very slightly different in structure, because in Encore mode, you sort of start with a few characters. If you die with one of them, you get to the next one. Or you can swap among them, which is really cool. So it's like, this area, I really want to climb this, so I'm going to switch to Knuckles and sort of climb up the wall instead of, jumping somewhere else. So it's actually really awesome, and I feel like I'm really discovering some new stuff about a game I already liked.
Cool.
Also, it has really cool Genesis box art.
Oh, right. I forgot. Actually, the Switch box looks like the red-banded Genesis box.
It's really good, cool. With very, like, 90s marketing copy on the back. There's, like, a screenshot, and it's like, graphics like they came out in 1999, which is very, very good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's rad.
Awesome. Cool. Patrick, Rob, do y'all have fun weekends?
No. Terrible. I don't go viral, is what I'll say.
Yeah, you went viral.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Never went viral.
Oh, you didn't hear about this, Rob? Did you actually
miss
this?
I was offline for 4 days, and I was so happy.
Heaven.
And I logged back in, and that fucking asshole was like, I don't know, chest thumping toward the president of Iran, and I'm so fucking done with this shit. Like, that was me like logging back on, and I was like, I've had 4 days offline. How's the world doing? And the world is the same as it ever was.
Yeah.
It's just we continue to live in this fucking psychodrama hellscape. So anyway, no, I wasn't following Twitter or viral content online. What did Patrick do?
That's
a whole separate conversation, Rob, but I don't want to go deep into the rabbit hole on all the James Gunn stuff that happened last week, even though I have lots of thoughts on it. But I tweeted about the situation. And then, like, I've had tweet, you know, having 150,000 whatever followers, like, you tweet stuff and, like, you get stuff back. Like, that is the nature of the platform and having that many people. And if I, you know, if I tweet something, like, particularly interesting or shareable, you know, it gets, like, a couple of thousand. Like, that's a good one. Like, that's a good-ass tweet is, like, a couple of thousand. You get those every once in a while. But I'm not sure I've ever had one that has, like, truly escaped, like, velocity. Like, I think this is the first one that's gone, like, so far outside the sphere where I would open my phone and it's like, I knew something was wrong when I posted the tweet and then TweetDeck immediately showed, like, 33 likes within, like, 20 seconds of it posting. And I was like, oh, no, that's a good sign, I guess, and a terrible sign. And then, fortunately, I went out the door to go pick up my kid, and she was trying to grab my phone away from me, and I was like, maybe I'll just let her have it and just not
and the children
the
shall lead.
From my hands. But then when I grabbed it back at some point while we were leaving the restaurant we were at, and it, you know, was at 15,000 likes. And I was like, oh, boy, that's been like 45 minutes. Like, that's not a great sign of where we're at. And, yeah, it was weird. It was fine. Like, it was fine. I blocked Mike Cernovich. Hot tip to people out there on the Twitter sphere. This is a tip thanks to Casey Malone, actually, friend of the pod. That
shout out to Casey Malone.
If you get retweeted by someone, or even quote tweeted by, I forget how it works with quote tweet. If someone retweets you, if you block them, it removes the tweet from their timeline. They are not allowed to share your content, even if it's post retweet. And so what ended up triggering like a huge amount. I mean, it got shared a lot because it was like a big inflection moment and continues to be a big inflection moment. But Mike Cernovich, you know, a Gamergate a troll, exploiter, like he is a horrible, you know, Pizzagate provocateur, like awful human being. But he retweeted it specifically, clearly, to just send a signal to the sky, like, oh, hey, you know, go make this person's life hell.
Right.
But yeah, if you rather than engaging with him, I just blocked him. And then a couple of minutes later, that removed it. And I still got all sorts of gunk for the rest of the weekend. But that, like, severely blunted a lot of some of the fallout. So it was weird. Yeah, I think the tweet ended somewhere around, I don't know, when I checked this morning, like 38,000 likes or, you know, some odd tweets. But the closest, Austin, you had a truly viral tweet when Twitter did this. You had your signatures joke, right? That went
viral.
Yeah.
Right? That's maybe the... Yeah. That was weird. That was a weird one.
But that was like a fun one.
Yeah, well, because what I got instead was just everybody... One, I got people being like, what's a signature? And I was like, I'm in a grave. I'm an old man. But I also got what I got was a lot of people doing the joke, their version of the joke, and that's fine. You know, that's like other people being funny, you know? It's fine.
Austin said
it
through gritted teeth.
No, you know,
I love
right people.
It's my favorite thing.
Online. Tried to kill me, you know, or send bomb threats at me, or tell me that I was a soy boy, or whatever the fuck they're doing these days. You know,
soy boy
is a big one these days. That's what they say. That was fun. Different thing entirely.
So trying to ignore all of that, I spent my time that I had with video games with Hollow Knight, which I...
Nice.
25 hours later, I managed to finish that. It's 76% or so. Apparently, I have not really finished it. Like, there is a, like, true ending that apparently is, like, worth, spending the extra, like, 7 to 10 hours to actually unlock. I've already accidentally done some of the steps to take care of it, so I may continue down that path just to because apparently.
Oh wait, like, so you finished it, but it doesn't. It doesn't wrap and then you're done. You get to stay in the world and like
it puts you right before the point that you go to fight a boss.
Good
and then
to
that
know.
Triggers an ending, and then once you finish it, it sends you back where you can just you can start a new game with a harder mode, or you can head back to where you were and continue exploring the world and try and find the different triggers that set up I think there are two different endings. Like there's like a good ending and then a best ending, and like it basically just requires you exploring the world and fighting increasingly more difficult bosses in order to do that stuff. So like now the game's going to require me to like start using walkthroughs, which is fine.
But that's fine because you beat the game at this point.
I've seen a huge amount of what was interesting about it to begin with. Now I just need to figure out like, all right, like the map in this game is actually not great. At a certain point, it gets very unwieldy so it's the point where it's like, okay, like if I've somehow missed that the map doesn't really mark that there is another section you can go to, I'm not going to, like, go around the map, like, 8 times, like, trying to figure out where it is. Like, all right,
just show me
the YouTube video that sends me to the part of the map. And so, truly a tremendous game. One of those games that, as I realized, the end game was in sight, regardless of whether I continue forward into the true ending stuff. Just a true delight. Like, actually sad every time you make progress. You're like, right, okay. Like, I'm about to enter the end room, like... I see how this goes, but what a truly delightful game. Easily an all-time favorite already, as I've mentioned before. And if you haven't played it before, you know, again, I'll be effusive in my praise and saying you should truly, even if you feel like you're burned out on those types of games, I think Hollow Knight is well worth your time.
I think Natalie is also getting close to the end of it, of Hollow Knight. I think maybe once the both of you finish it, whether or not I'm there yet, I'll be close probably, or at least I'll play enough to have a conversation about it. And I'm not that big of a spoiler. Like, I'm not that afraid of spoilers. So we should do a spoiler cast of some sort. So, hey, if you have Hollow Knight questions or thoughts, feel free to send those in to gaming@vice.com and use the
subject. Hollow Knight.
Hollow Knight. That sounds fun. Not quite a 101, but like, hey, we're going to talk about this thing with spoilers, so send those in. Is Rob? Rob, are you there? Are you
the
back?
General?
Did Rob just sit back down? Rob did just sit back down. Hi, Rob. Hi,
hey,
Rob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey.
How's it going?
Hi. Hey, Rob. Sorry you were away for a second. I thought maybe it was time to talk to you about something important, which is earlier this morning, you were on a call with me, and what you said was that you had a transcendental wargaming experience.
Yes.
I did.
Everyone laughed because that is your equivalent of saying you spent the weekend watching No Man's Sky fandom tear each other apart over clouds.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
And we are back to hear about the transformative, life-changing,
transcendental
weekend that Rob Zachney had with some board games, some war games.
Not board games.
I'm sorry. I would never.
Yeah. I enjoyed a little weekend of World War One. That's how I decided to spend my my time in Portland. I flew out to see Bruce Garrick from Three Moves Ahead, and Portland is beautiful, had nothing but great weather, didn't see shit, didn't do shit. Sat inside with a stack of World War One board games.
Rob, I appreciate that you talk about this weekend the way I talk to the police. Didn't see shit, didn't do shit.
Yeah, that's pretty much. You know, there was a rumor that on a clear day you could see Mount Rainier. I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't.
You could see Mount Blanc.
Like, Like, oh, I got back together with my college friends. Good. We went out and got blackout drunk like we used to. Woo! And it's instead...
Yeah, instead we ran three different iterations of the Von Schlieffen plan to see how various game systems...
Can you spell that for me?
Schlieffen. S-C-H-L-I-E-F-F-E-N.
We don't know enough to question him on this. He could be bullshitting
us. He's making
us.
It up. He's making it up as he goes along.
That's it. Rob's this kind of smart person that could con us.
When it comes to the Von Schlieffen plan, you don't make it up as you go along. That's the entire point of the Von Schlieffen plan. The problems crop up when people start making it up as they go along, which is what historically happened, and that's why Germany ended up losing World War I.
I see.
Although modern scholarship says that the plan was fucked from the start. Anyway, point is... So, I played three World War I board games.
Different ones. All about the same war.
Yes. And I played each of them...
The Von Schlieffen plan was one of them? It's just named this?
Pardon?
One of them is just named the Von Schlieffen plan?
Oh, one of the games?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, I see.
No, he's deeper in
the topic.
Yes.
Of the game. Yes. I'm just trying to keep score. That's all. That's my game right here. All right, I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's like saying, Danielle, it would be like if you were saying you spent the weekend playing three different games about the Federation Cardassian War. You know what I mean?
I see.
Like,
I got you. Thank
or
you
actually
for
more
catching
than that.
It in terms
you have to
I
zoom
understand.
Zoom in a little bit more to the point where you're like talking specifically about some sort of Cardassian.
Wolf 359, I understand.
Right, that's exactly it. It was a very specific thing, like Wolf 359. Yeah.
And so the thing is... there are three really interesting war games that have completely different approaches to modeling this conflict. And it was just really cool going back to back to see how three teams of game designers using completely different like mechanics and ways of interpreting what happened and what was important in the historical outcome arrive at three completely like divergent game experiences about the exact same topic. And so it was funny seeing how like certain elements of the history will crop up in one game but be completely invisible in another. But then a different part of the story becomes extremely salient in a different game that the other two miss.
Can you dig in just a little bit there? Like not enough to where like I don't know shit about this.
Say no more, Austin.
I'm sorry.
We can dig in.
The thirst trap was set.
Let me tell you.
The thirst trap was set. My curiosity got the better of me.
We're digging into a trench right now. All right.
Yes, very good, Paul. Trench warfare. How do games handle trench warfare? Huge question when it comes to World War I. Important question. And the answer is the war opens. The bloodiest phase of the war is the opening few months before everyone's dug in. And then it settles into trenches. And basically, it's just who's going to be the last nation standing. But so an example of a way a game makes this story, like brings to life a certain aspect of the history that others might not. Probably my favorite game of the weekend that I played was a game called Fields of Despair.
Ooh, great. What a lighthearted name.
It's fantastic, and it is a block-driven war game. So when you're playing across from somebody, you're looking at your little wooden blocks. It's like Stratego, but for war gamers. It's like serious Stratego. And the cool thing is, each block could be a stack of up to 20 strength points, or it could be a block with just 4. And when you remove a strength point, you just turn it like on its side, so that now the like it goes from 20 to 19, and the 19 is on the top, and that's how you tell. But the cool thing is, the game has a stacking limit of 3 blocks per hex, and so the thing is you're playing your opponent, they will bluff you constantly by showing you like, oh man, I'm pushing these massive stacks of armies at you,
but you don't know what's... Can you see the top stack?
No,
can you not see?
You can't
anything?
See. All you see is the blocks.
So you see, like, oh, there's 3 blocks there, but you have no idea
that
if those 3 blocks
say... That could be 3 or 60.
Right. That's hard to guess.
That is very hard to guess. And
so it's like Netrunner, but with, like, mustard gas.
Absolutely. And you do have to prepare for the mustard gas. But so this was a really cool thing. The part of the story this gets across is so it starts out, the Germans, the von Schlieffen plan is all about like getting around all the French fortifications and delivering this massive like right hook to the north of Paris, where like the French had no defensive preparations, their armies were not deployed, and they damn near make it. But the problem that begins to happen for the Germans is the commanders on the scene begin getting increasingly paranoid about what is around them, because they just don't know. And they're really spread out compared to where they were at the start of the war. And so they start hedging their bets at the exact moment when they shouldn't be doing this. They need to stick to the plan and just go straight to Paris.
Stick to the plan. That's what you said.
But all of them start being like, I think we're fucking this up. Like, I think there's French armies out around us. I know there's French troops, like, all around us. We need to start guarding against this. We need to start hedging our bets and proceeding more cautiously. And this is what allows the French to sort of rally. And the German armies actually become so conservative, they end up turning too far south and exposing the flank to the French armies. And they get just absolutely destroyed. So that's the history of it. In this game, what really delighted me is that both me as the French player, the French-British player, and Bruce as the German player, both of us have that moment of, at first, I really become fixated on holding my initial positions, and I'm really slow to react to the fact that the Germans have broken through across to the north, because I'm really fixating on all these stacks directly across from me in the south. And so I'm really slow to respond to the fact that, like, he's just pouring across northern France. And by the time I realize, right, like, wait, that's where they all are, I'm fucked. Right. And so I have this, like, these turns of, like, absolute panic, just everybody trying to race back to Paris and get ahead of this German assault. But the German player, seeing all these stacks start to propagate around his right hook, and now he's like, I have no idea what's over there. Like,
right.
Is that the French army? Like, is it actually, like...
My favorite internet meme.
Yeah.
Is that the French army?
Yeah. No, so it's this cool moment of, like, you're sitting there as the... He's sitting there as the German player, and he is surrounded by some kind of French forces, but he doesn't know if it's just, like, a scratch force of, like, just, like, you know, a screening force that is nothing, or if that's the main French army. And so the German player also starts to, like, spread out and start to dilute their attack because you just don't know where the actual fight's going to be.
Right.
And
how
so,
could you?
Yeah. And, well, one of the ways you can later in the game is this is where air combat comes in. You can deploy air tokens to reveal a stack, but you can also send your air tokens to dogfight against theirs and conceal what's there. And so it ends up being a really, really cool game, because you are constantly dealing with these massive levels of uncertainty. And a lot of it becomes this game of bluffing and mind games and figuring out, like, yeah, the enemy has all these positions, but what do they actually care about? What are they actually trying to do at this exact moment? And that's something I am hard pressed to name any war games that have, like, block games are nothing new, but one that has this kind of variability is really strange, but really fits the theme of, like, these armies are titanic. But
they have no idea. They have no information.
Right.
They're titanic and don't know what's right in front of them.
Right. They're just heavyweights, like, flailing blindly in the dark.
Cool. So wait, how does that same experience show up in another one of the games you played? Maybe we don't need to do the full all three of the games you played, but
yeah.
But how does that thing of, like, hey, the fast advance gets thrown into disarray because you don't have information show up in one of the other games you played?
Yeah. So, it's interesting. It becomes less about information. So the other game we played is a game called Paths of Glory, which is a really sort of pivotal war game that introduced a lot of card-driven mechanics. It really refined them. So Twilight Struggle is in some ways a descendant of Paths of Glory.
Twilight Struggle is also fucking fantastic. So
great game. This is more of a deck builder approach,
gotcha.
But it's played sort of openly. But you don't know what the other guy has in their hand, and so you're sitting there, and they could have a hand that basically allows them, every card has ops values. And so if a card has four, that's four actions you can take off of that card. You get, like, that
so when
card,
you say the game is, really quickly, when you say that the game is played openly, what that means is that the board,
the token
stuff on the map, you're like, oh yeah, that army has X, is worth X. Or that value. Right.
But you don't know what someone can actually activate. Like, you have a huge army there. You have two huge armies. And if you can make them all move, then you got a real offensive going. But what if you got a bunch of shitty cards that only have values of one, and you can't actually make much happen at all? Mm-hmm. But really the point of this game that it's trying to bring across is the thing the Germans have to be worried about. It's less about where are the French. It's more about where are the Russians. How quickly are the Russians going to start steamrolling through Eastern Germany? Because to make this push happen against France, we basically left the back door completely unguarded. And so the thing you see unfold in that game is the French are falling back and back and back. And they're like, the German armies are more powerful. And the French are desperately trying to mobilize and bring out fresh troops. And one thing they can do, though, to pressure the Germans, is they can actually sort of stand pat on the Western Front a little bit and start playing their cards for the Russians and getting them to mobilize. And now the German player is like, well, I'm making all these advances. But the French aren't even, they're just like letting defensive actions occur. They're not being proactive. And the Russians are almost in Berlin at this point. So can I actually continue with this attack, or do I need to start shipping troops back to Germany?
Home. Yeah. Are the Russians in that game a player faction, or are those
So it's basically Central Powers versus Allies. It's two players.
Okay.
You control everybody. So you control the Germans, the Austrians, later Turkey. And the Entente controls UK, France, and Russia, and Serbia.
And is it like Twilight Struggle in that, like, the over time the board state changes to reflect like moments in the war? Okay,
gotcha. It tries to. The cards all have, like in Twilight Struggle, the cards all have events that are like tied to historical, occurrences. But again, you can also delay those events from happening by playing it for the ops points. Like, you can bring Italy into the war, but the Italy card is, I think, ops value 5. So do you want to bring Italy in as an ally and get access to the resources, or do you just want to take 5 actions in one turn? But then that card gets buried, and you have to wait to draw it again.
For people who have no idea what any of these types of things sound or mean, I will recommend, because, you know, it's not the same thing, but Twilight Struggle is a game that has that same sort of card system with ops points. And there is a really decent iPad and PC version of Twilight Struggle.
It's great.
And Drew Scanlon and I did a quick look for it back at Giant Bomb. So maybe go dig that up if you want to see us. We were both learning the game for the first time at that point. And we only played through maybe one or two phases of it. But it was a lot of fun, so go check that out.
Nice.
Anyone playing anything else? Anyone else? Was that the basic length of your transcendental board gaming experience? I'll be honest. It doesn't sound like you changed that much. It sounds like you've just become the best version of yourself already, Rob.
Well, why wouldn't that be what I want? Like, that's the change I desire, Austin.
That's fair. Yeah.
That's what we can all hope to achieve, Austin. Okay. Maslow's, you know, hierarchy of needs. Like, he's at the top of the pyramid now.
Rob is? Rob is on top of the Maslow's. Okay, I thought you meant for everybody. At the very top, once you've dealt with food, once you've dealt with,
is Rob.
With shelter.
Is Rob.
Then you get access. Then you can focus on your Rob.
This is why there's so much sadness in the world. Is like, sadly, people cannot be fulfilled because there's only one of me. And so people are like, this is actually the source of post-post modernity. Which is, of course, the realization that nothing will satisfy you. You'll never be happy or complete, for you've arrived not at the top of the pyramid, but at the final step below acquiring a Rob.
Oh.
Gotcha. Pre-Rob state.
I started playing...
You've been robbed!
That's why they call it that.
I did start playing King of Dragon Pass.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, nice.
On the plane. Nice. That was pretty cool. I am totally groping my way forward again, like blindly in that game. Things are happening. Tribes are pissed off at me. I'm not entirely, like, should I go fuck these people up? Should I go, like, try to make nice with them? Should I give them some
cattle?
It is cattle?
Good. Your ancestors are honored when you go fuck people up in that game.
Oh.
You come from an ancestry that is all about going to fuck people, but not killing them, to be clear. Like, that's, like, one of those big things in that game that's really interesting. It's
ritual combat.
It's ritual combat. There are rules here, which is like, I'm trying to steal your fucking cows. Get away from me. I'm going to steal your cows. I'll cut you if you don't let me steal your cows. And it's fine to do that. It's fine to be – that's awesome. What's bad is if you cut someone so bad they die. And then it's like, yo, you killed somebody over some cows?
I'm assuming medicine isn't amazing in this world.
It's a thing you can invest in.
Is it?
Yeah, if you have good healers, you can go to war and come back and be like, yeah, I'm good. I'm all healed up. All
right.
Yeah.
You like when you allocate you have like trained soldier units, like heroes, you like basically like picked soldiers, you have footmen, just dudes with spears, and then you have auxiliaries, healers, and you put enough of those in the hopper and they'll prevent deaths. But I had a very amusing incident with a troll, for instance.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure you know where this story is going, Patrick. Austin. I'm sure you remember the event.
There's a couple of trolls in King of Dragon Pass. You tell me.
So little preface for this. There's this dude, like, Orin or something like that. Anyway, we had this battle against this other tribe, and he just went ham on these guys. We came out of nowhere, fucked up their entire army, like, killed their wizard. It was awesome.
This is like for people who don't know, I've talked about it on the podcast before. Again, I've streamed this game a bunch of times. You can find it. It's like Viking fantasy, Norse fantasy adjacent. It's like the very quick and dirty analogy that I'll give.
But it plays a lot more just like a storybook.
It's like a storybook that also on the lower left, you'll always know how many cows you have.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I've made games like this.
Yeah.
Not nearly, I'm sure, as good by any means, but of the ilk. Yeah.
But so this guy is like, holy shit, it turns out this guy's our best warrior. This will put him in the front of every battle. A couple months later, a troll warrior shows up.
Oh, shit.
And she's like, yo, you humans think you're tough, huh? I hear your I think your clan thinks you're pretty much all that. Well, I'm here to challenge you. I'm going to fuck you guys up and show you're nothing compared to trolls. Who you got? Who wants to go? And she picks up a boulder at that point and, like, spikes it and just pulverizes it to dust. And all the warriors in the tribe are just like, oh, this isn't good. Like, and so all my advisors, you can sort of query your advisors, like, hey, what should I do here? All my advisors were like, actually, you know, she has no even standing to bring a challenge. Like, what's this troll doing here? Like, I don't even think, why pick up this challenge? You don't need to. We have nothing to prove you're a troll.
Gaslighting.
And I was like, no, I've got Orin, and he's going to fuck up that troll. So I was like, Orin, get in there. And Orin's like, I got this. And Troll's like, all right, this who you picked? Hell yeah, it is. She's like, great. Time for the eating contest.
Oh. That's not the sort of contest it was supposed to be.
No. And so she just starts, like, fucking pounding down stew and, like, sausages and shit.
Who makes the stew and the sausages?
I don't know.
She's just scamming you for dinner.
Yes. Yes. So we prepare the feast, and she's eating all this shit. And Orin's like, I guess I'm going to try to pack away some of this stuff. But my stomach's kind of acting up, and he taps out after, like, a couple bowls. And she just eats, like, the village out of food. And she's like, well, I told you, trolls are best. See y'all later. Bye.
So can I spoil one of the other outcomes for this, Rob?
Yeah,
this
go.
One event. Do you mind if I do this? So there is one way to win this, which is, so you have a, you mentioned you have a hero, like this game, like proc gen is strong, but it randomly generates names and face, or like pulls from a pool of faces for all of the kind of your council members, the wise people who can guide you and your family and your tribe down the future. And you have your people who are from like the death, you know, cult clan, and you have people who are from like the sun, or not the sun clan, they're actually pretty anti-sun, the storm god clan, or, you know, family. And of course you have the trickster god people. And so if you happen to have a trickster on your clan council at that point, you can use the trickster as your duelist. And what it says is, the trickster may lose, but if you do win, this is what happens. Your trickster exclaims, "I'm so hungry I could eat a horse." And he did, somehow gulping down a roan stallion before it could get out more than a startled knicker. Oh. Then he kept going, eating two cows the same way. The carls watched with horrified fascination, too shocked to complain. Amulguk, the troll, called for a cow as well and ate it somewhat more slowly, but she could only manage a dozen cabbages more and had to concede defeat. "Anytime, come to cave for dinner." Your trickster belches, knocking a low-flying thrush out of the sky. As agreed, Amulguk gave us a golden crown, which appeared to have a few bites taken out of it. It's a really good game.
Wow.
It's a really good
game. How does the trickster eat the cows?
He's a trickster. What are you going to do?
Or he made it look like he
Who could say? Who could say?
Did your cow counter go down?
That's the question.
That's the truest, you know, like, actual, that number is truth and reality.
It is.
And if it wasn't affected, you know then that you know he conjured not, a fake cow
and ate it.
Pretended to eat it. Yeah.
But he did say he could eat a horse, so, I mean, maybe he did eat that horse. I don't know.
Maybe the horse.
I have not had time to put more time into Six Ages, which is like the sequel slash spiritual successor to this game, to King of Dragon Pass, because I just haven't been in the right headspace for it. Like, I need to be in a very specific, like, all right, I'm going to sit down with my iPad and turn off Twitter and turn off the rest of the world. I'm not going to play Hollow Knight. I'm not going to watch something on TV while I'm playing a game. Like, I'm just going to play this.
Cross-country flight. Like,
that's it.
Mm-hmm. To a place you're going to play your favorite games about your favorite topic.
Yeah, World War One and trolls.
Trolls eating horses. I mean,
Austin, the plane can take you anywhere. Do you want to go to Cyberpunk land? You can just go there. I mean, you can be like, all right.
You already live there.
This
I kind of already live. Oh, we got a new one, by the way. We got a new URL. It's been a while since we busted one of these out. I'd like everybody on the old internet to go ahead and type in cyberpunk.university.
Wow.
Which redirects now to Waypoint.
Good.
And it's good. What I love is that it's a masked redirect, so it just says cyberpunk.university at the top.
Yeah, and it stays.
That's what I like to see. Shout-outs to who did that one? Do you remember? I don't remember who set that up. But thank you so much for setting up cyberpunk.university. No, my version of your thing is just Scythe, right? It's just the World War One, post-World War One, pre-World War II, but mechs, which I've never played and really want to.
Gotcha.
That's where I would like to get on a plane too. Oh well. I think that's pretty much it. We should go into the question bucket maybe. If people are good for that, take a quick dip in the question bucket and answer some questions before we head out today. If you have questions, you can send them over to gamingatvice.com. And the first one is a holdover. I wanted to do this one last time, but ran out of time. It comes in from Morgan, who says, "Hey, Waypoint, my name is Morgan, and I'm from Utah, one of the few, probably. My question is, when probably one of the few people
it's
who listens,
beautiful
I'm,
state.
I, there's a lot no, of I people totally. In Utah, to be yeah. clear.
Only a couple of Morgans out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My question is, when playing difficult games, how do you stay calm when playing? I've played all three Dark Souls games, and I've often gotten about halfway through before I just can't handle it anymore and quit. Do you have any suggestions as to staying calm and not raging at infuriating video games?"
When I was a full-time reviewer of games, sometimes I had to play extremely difficult games in a very fast manner. What I would do once I got really, really stuck is I turned the sound off entirely.
Mm.
There's one game called like Alien Spidey, I think is the name of it, that was just like a ridiculously difficult 2D platformer. Just really, really punishing, really, really, really hard. Like the developers put a stream on of them playing it and failing it more than 80 times. And like, it was like, what a selling point. I put on either a podcast or like a GDC talk, something that will actually really, really take my mind off things. I completely turn the sound off and just focus entirely on like, just match the visuals to like the beat of the talking. Basically, that's sort of a weird thing I focus on. But yeah, completely taking off some of the sensory stimulus, putting something else to replace it that won't piss me off, and going from there.
That's a really good idea. That's a really, really smart idea. Rob and Patrick, do y'all have any techniques here?
So I'm trying to remember. So when I've encountered situations, feeling they're describing, I feel like is a similar sort of mental space I get into if I hit like writer's block or something like that. I feel like writer's block is often a similar sort of feeling where you're just bashing up against something and you're not quite sure how to go forward. And so it's not a trick that's going to be applicable to everyone, but this was a trick that would work for me sometimes, is that, like, being buzzed, having, like, a drink and a half was the kind of thing that got me to just, like, loosen up in a way that didn't impact my ability to, like, physically play something or stay mentally sort of, like, fully engaged, but got me to just sort of, like, ugh, like, okay, just, like, let it go a little bit. I found that that was useful on certain pieces that I've written in the past where it's, like, you know, like, late at night or something, it's, like, 9 o'clock, and it's, like, okay. It's, like, I have, like, a small glass of whiskey, and, like, by the end of that, like, I suddenly just find myself, like, humming through it in a way that I was not before. And I haven't... At this point, I've played so many difficult video games that I don't really need those sort of, like, mechanisms. And, right. And like, people have different relationships with alcohol, so I'm not like, advocating everyone should go. I'm just saying, maybe you have a different version of that. Like, maybe it's weed, maybe it's whatever. Like, but if there's, like, some sort of, like, personal indulgence that, like, gets you to, like, let down a little bit of, like, your hang-ups, like, I have found that to be, like, very useful for situations like that, whether it's a difficult game or writer's block or something similar.
It's a good one. That's also a good one. Rob, do you, you know,
I'm just thinking about how much I miss smoking right now. Like, I was such a good gamer when I was like, oh, fuck this. And, like, just step away from the desk, go outside, enjoy the fresh air, the cool of the night, have a cigarette, calm down, think about how I was going to tackle that problem, you know, in a new way or sort of wrestle with it a little bit, go back inside, continue, and repeat as needed. Sadly, I can't do that anymore, and it's been downhill since. So something I found myself... I quit games a lot. Like, not quit yeah. and, like, leave them, but, like, something I notice now I do a lot is... I'll have a shitty match, or I'll suffer a bad setback, and I'm like, I'm done. And I quit. And then I go to something else for like 5 minutes. I load the dishwasher or something. Or just like, you know, read a book, run a quick errand, whatever. And then what do you know? I'm starting to jones for that game again. I'm like, I could now that I've stepped away from it a little bit, I think I'd go back because I still want to play it. And now I'm feeling a little refreshed and I'm still engaged with it. And I'll just fire it back up. And so I get the, like, I have the cathartic moment of being like, closing that, we're done here. But then I'm right back in it, like, you know, 5-10 minutes later.
That's a good, I think that's probably the closest to what I do. I will sometimes even just, like, run to the store or, like, sometimes I'll load up a different game for seriously 30 seconds, 45 seconds, but this isn't what I want to be doing.
You see the menu and you're like, this isn't right.
This isn't right. I'm in the middle of this other thing. I'm gonna go back to that platforming puzzle. Fine. So that's definitely closest for me. I don't have like a trick. Mine is just like I think for me most of the time it's just about going in to a game with expectations set for what that game is going to do. And not playing things I don't think I'll enjoy, if that makes sense. Like, I like the Souls games, and we were just talking about this on the Bloodborne stream the other day, that, like, I'm totally cool with dying because my perspective on it is, like, each death is meaningless. Each death still allows for what feels like progress to me. It's one of the reasons why I actually my beef with Bloodborne is about the blood vials, because that stops me from always being able to go do something new. Yeah, exactly. And it like pulls me away from focusing on the forward progress of figuring out a boss, or like, as long as I'm focused on that stuff, even when I lose and my equipment gets whatever it is, like, I'm still feeling like I'm making forward progress because I have that mindset. But there are totally games that I go into and I'm like, man, fuck this. Like, I'm not, there was definitely a point when I got stuck in like a gunfight in the first Uncharted forever ago. And I was like, man, fuck this. This isn't why I'm playing this game. This isn't what – I'm not interested in this, right? And would walk away from it, you know, or like not, you know, not feel the urge to finish that thing, because it's getting in the way of what the experience I wanted. So for me, it's a lot of pregame, like getting my head in the right place. And that's part of the problem that I've hit with Hollow Knight a little bit was like, oh, I didn't – the platforming is here and I liked the really early light platforming stuff. But now that it's a challenge that's stopping me from seeing the world and sometimes mm-hmm. even meeting an NPC or two, that feels frustrating because what I'm here for is to see the NPCs and explore the world more than precise platforming challenges. And I haven't hit any that have made me stop the game completely at this point. But definitely it's been easy to be like, well, I'll play some more Octopath Traveler or I'll play some more of this. And so that is definitely – or like Octopath is another great one, which is like my expectations were set. I know the party isn't going to be like showing up in each other's quest lines, and having those expectations set means when it doesn't happen, I'm cool with it because I know it's not going to happen. It's one of those things that's like important for me to read about games ahead of time sometimes. One of the reasons I'm not like very spoiler phobic is I tend to really enjoy things that I already know the general structure to, and even some of the big plot twists or any some of the big like story moments or beats. I love seeing how something – knowing where something's going sometimes can make it really enjoyable to see where it's going or see how it gets there, rather. So that can be useful for me. Or that's also another great one. It's just like spoil something for yourself. What do you get for beating this really hard boss fight? Do you get something cool? That has made me like a little more chill because it's like, okay, I can see a little bit ahead. That makes me excited to push through this hard moment or something like that.
I have one other.
Please.
That I've definitely used in my life to yes. constructive effect is to do a lot of push-ups. You get mad. It's like actually getting out aggression in a lot of ways. Or if you have a punching bag or something like that, or a pull-up bar, like doing like just a little set of exercise can make you feel less aggressive and feel like, yeah, that's right. If you're a bro like me, anyway.
No, totally. That's a great one for sure.
Someone who did a stream about Souls, I think, where they had to do an exercise routine every time they died. It might have been push-ups.
Was that not push-up club? Was that not Dave Lang's push-up club?
I mean, that might have been a variant of it. Like, okay. I wouldn't be shocked if, like, I know that it was a thing too, but someone has done something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a healthy way to get out aggression.
Totally.
Is a thing. If you're pissed off at the game and it's like, all right, let me get out a little bit.
So this is a really good question that came in a little while ago, and I'd seen it and misread it, and I was like, oh, I don't know that we can actually answer this question, but I recently reread it. I was like, oh no, this is actually really good. So, hey, Wayfarers, I've been enjoying my time with Warhammer Vermintide 2, but it hasn't really gotten me interested in the whole universe. That said, I'm always looking for a way into different, IPs as I'm willing to give them a try. I just need a good jumping off point. Since all of you have your various interests, where would you recommend people get started in them? Please mention, by the way, the Waypoint Game Jam Big Boy season is going on right now. And for all of July, I think it ends on July 6th. You can find out a link on the forum. So forum.waypoint.advice.com or discourse.zone. There's a
ongoing
page. August 6th. What did I say? I said July 6th.
Yeah.
My bad.
Sorry.
It goes on until August 6th. I think you can enter. There's an itch.io page, itch.io/jam/big-boy-season for more on that. I'm excited to see these games. Seem cool. But yeah, so I think that's an interesting one because I think we all have our various interests, our various favorite, you know, fictional worlds and game series and book series and films and TV shows. What's something that you know that like people like or you think people would like it if only they could break into it somewhere? And what's a great suggestion to get them in? Anybody?
Oh, I actually did this exercise with horror movies, whether it was,
oh, really?
I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, where I made two different lists. I made a list, like every October I do something called Shocktober, which is not a unique name, but it's mm-hmm. where my wife and I compile a list of movies to watch every day of the month and end up only watching like 10 of them, but it's just like an exercise and trying to come up with a mixture of like old favorites and new stuff. But then I also did a list that was like, oh, here, like if you have been curious about horror, if, like maybe you saw Hereditary and was like, oh shit, like maybe I do like horror movies. I'm gonna see if I can find that list. Give me a second. If someone else has an answer right away, I'm gonna see if I can find that list that I made.
I have a skip list for Farscape.
Do you?
Because I think the first season's very rough. It has some great stuff, but it's very rough, especially until the end. I'll also look for my skip list. It's definitely on the sort of skip list website.
Rob, do you have one while people are looking for their
skippable
things?
Skippable. It's on skippable.tumblr.
Okay.
Just Google skippable, Tumblr, Farscape. I have, it's a whole thing. All it's annotated, like the whole thing is right there. It's set for you, my friend.
Awesome. Rob, do you have one of these?
The Guns of August is a really incredible book by Barbara Tuchman. Okay. And I think, you know, if you give that a shot, you'll really know by the end of that if World War I fandom is for you. Now, some people say the later seasons dragged on quite a bit. Not a lot happened.
Seasons, yeah, sure. Winter and such, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I think if you sort of scratch beneath the surface and you're not just looking for, like, you know, lines moving on a map, there's a lot of dynamism and development that happens, you know, across the entire history of that war. But Guns of August is a good place to get in. And Alistair Horne's Verdun, 1916, The Price of Glory is a right, good place to see where that's going to continue.
Sure. For me, it's pretty easy.
Found it.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
No, all you.
Just do a Google search. It's an article on Kotaku called 31 Movies for Horror Newcomers. And yeah, I kind of run the gamut of, you know, older films, you know, basically like my familiarity with horror. I don't know a whole lot about horror like pre-60s, but, you know, runs the gamut from, you know, Suspiria to Trick or Treat to Cool. Entity and Martyr and like a whole bunch. It runs a bunch of stuff that's like, there's gore stuff, there's thriller stuff, it's kind of, if you just like want a broad, like, ha, like I want to see like the spectrum of like horror films from the last couple of decades, if you search for that will give you a kind of a different sense of different subgenres within horror itself that was self-selected by me. So yeah, 31 movies for horror newcomers.
Nice.
Universal Century 0079, The Jungles of Southeast Asia. During the One-Year War, the Earth Federation and the Principality of Zeon are fighting a brutal guerrilla war for control of the area and its resources. Zeon's best hope for victory in the region rests with an experimental mobile armor, the Apsalis, and its pilot, Ina Sahalin. Meanwhile, the Earth Federal Army, which has been fighting Zeon in the region, receive reinforcements in the form of Ensign Shiro Amada, newly named commander of the 08th Mobile Suit Team. Ina and Shiro have met each other from a mutual rescue in space. But when Shiro discovers that Ina is in fact the pilot of the Zeon mobile armor, he is arrested for treason. The Federation offers Shiro one chance at redemption. He must take the 08th MS team deep into Zeon-held territory to find Zeon's hidden base. With the Zeon backed into a corner and the Federation dependent on Shiro and his team for victory, the star-crossed lovers must decide where their true allegiances lie. With each other or with their respective sides. 08th MS team is my, like, this is how you should learn. This is how you should try out Gundam for the first time. There is a billion Gundam shows. There are a billion mecha properties, even more broadly than that. But I really think that 08th MS team is a great entryway into what is mecha anime and what is Gundam specifically. And you can tweak what you like about it to find something else to go do. So, like, it's a show about, like it says, it's kind of like Vietnam by way of Gundam. You're following like low-level characters who are in beat-up mechs, who are operating behind enemy lines in jungles, in urban environments. It's like on its own, it's really good, but you know, it's filled with so many variations of stuff that shows up in a more focused way in other properties. So, do you really like the idea that it's a mech anime that takes war seriously, then from that you can go watch 0080 War in the Pocket, which is like really deconstructs the entire idea of romanticizing war, but from a child's perspective. Like, it's a show that opens with a child drawing a big mech, and then the rest of that show is like, oh man, maybe mechs are actually fucking terrible and they shouldn't exist at all. If you really like the big super-powered weapons that show up in 08th MS Team, then you can go to this other show. Or if you really like the relationships between people all on the same side who are like, you know, like military buddies, and you can go watch this other show. Like, it's a really great jumping off point in different directions, and also it's just good in its own right. It's also only 12 episodes, and that is like a huge thing with me and anime in general, is like so many big anime series are, you know, 26 episodes or 25 episodes and then a second season of 25 episodes, and 08th MS Team, again, 08th, like 08th MS.
08
yeah, TH. MS Team. Okay. M for Mobile Suit. MS Team. Mobile Suit Gundam, the 08th MS Team, is like my, oh, this is how you can get into Gundam in general. It's also from this like very great little moment of, it's from the mid-90s when it was made. And so it has just enough of like the old style of animation. It's pre like CG stuff. And so it has just enough of the flair of like the late 80s, early 90s anime style, but it's still pretty crisp in terms of like its looks. So that is my how you get into this thing I care about suggestion.
Nice.
That's an easy one. So
that almost felt like a waypoint.
That was it. That was my waypoint. No, because I have one real waypoint this week.
Oh, okay.
And we switch to waypoints and then wrap it up. My waypoint this week is Sorry to Bother You, which I finally saw.
Oh, good.
Which Kata was giving me a thumbs up here. It's a movie by Boots Riley, who is a director and rapper and is just like a general cool dude. It stars Lakeith Stanfield, who you might know from Atlanta. It is a really fascinating movie. I really enjoyed it. I think the third act maybe doesn't hit the ground running as well as it needs to, but maybe that's okay. The basic pitch is, if you haven't seen any trailers, Lincoln Stanfield plays a kind of down on his luck dude who is living in Oakland and like bouncing from job to job, and he goes to work at a call center. And while there, another character encourages him to start using his white voice in order to get better sales, and he's good at it. And what ends up happening is, what if Boots Riley made an episode of Black Mirror? Because there's a degree of like American satire happening in the background as an Amazon stand-in, and lots of reality TV show stand-in type things are like happening in the wings, and bit by bit those begin to take over the main plot until it's revealed that the entire film is this sort of call to action against corporate control and is this sort of like exploration of class loyalty versus kind of your personal like growth in terms of like wealth, in terms of where you're finding validation for the self. That we live in a world in which external validation comes from your job and your career growth more than maybe from like camaraderie among your peers, and is also just like really beautifully shot. It has lots of really great little bits in it. I think the third act again maybe didn't hit me super super strong, and it felt like it almost sidestepped some of its most interesting questions, which is like, hey, on one hand, take care of yourself and your family and like take money from capitalists whenever you can, because fuck them. Like, I need to pay for my family. My mom is sick. My uncle is going to get evicted. That's a compelling reason to take a promotion. But also, there's this drive towards worker solidarity. How do you work that out? And I think it kind of sidesteps the dilemma there by the end. But its answer is still pretty fucking fantastic. So go check that out again. It's called Sorry to Bother You. It's just rough. It's rough in a way that's like interesting that it got made. Like, it doesn't feel – there are moments when you're like, this feels like a student film, but in a really compelling way because it's actually vital. Got made. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. How about y'all? Waypoints.
Go ahead, guys.
Okay. Yours was serious, but I'm going to connect to movies. I like movies too.
Okay.
My wife and I's date night is almost always going to the movies. Like, when we get a chance to have someone else watch our daughter and have some time to ourselves, like, it's like our great fear when we had our daughter was that like we liked going to the movies. Like, the act of going to the movies, getting out of our house, like going to see stuff, being part of the conversation, like that was something that was really important to us. And so we've been lucky enough that through my mom, we've had a chance to like continue that. Now, related to that, we go to a movie theater. And this is more normal these days, but it's very novel when it went in around here, was that like the movie theater has a bar in it. And my wife and I used to be the people who go to the movie theater and sneak in a six-pack, and now I can pay for that six-pack. Although one time
–
I've had a couple of times where I've snuck beer into a movie theater and then realized once I got there that I could have just bought it there. And then, like, had the ethical dilemma of, like, well, do I give my money to them because I could have bought it here? Nah, I'm going to drink this cheaper beer. anyway, but – so I started becoming curious about they'll do like drink tie-ins with big movie at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Often the comic book movie of the moment, or not of the moment, like of the month, because there's like one a month these days. And those are often the movies we go to see. We go to see the spectacle movies because like that's the most effective use of our time and like what a theater is really good at.
Right.
And then I recently, this year, made a commitment to always get the tie-in drink. Like, always, at least once, is that required to get the tie-in drink. And there's usually two options. At least that's been the case at the AMC theaters, is that there'll be, like, two. Like, Ant-Man and the Wasp was the last one we saw. There was one for Ant-Man. There's one for the Wasp. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I get these drinks, they are truly dreadful. Like, they are not something I would ever pick, choose, have any interest in. It both gets me out of my comfort zone, and I have been apologized to by the bartender.
Oh, God.
In which they go, we know these drinks are dreadful. They come down from corporate. If twice the lady, and it's like the same lady that's like there every time, she's like, if you don't like this, bring it back, and I will give you something else. And my response is always, no, I have made this bed. It's an expensive bed. It's a very expensive bed. But I'm going to, well, because it's a movie. It's both a bar, which is itself expensive, and then a movie bar that is selling you a like tie-in drink. Like you've, it's
so
a,
how
it's
much
a
is
literal
a
cocktail and a metaphorical cocktail.
Yeah,
you're talking like $15 for one of these drinks.
All right. And,
that's still a lot of
we're
money.
In the neighborhood.
That's
yeah.
another movie ticket. You could have brought
it's
another person.
It's more expensive than the movie.
You'd be drinking at the time.
I'm in New York, so.
Yeah, in New York, that's about the same. But yeah, wow.
But it's so much fun because I just drink the most absurd drinks and they're just weird and fun. And so it's just a little thing that I've done recently. Like, again, it's expensive, but like I have one of them and just move on. But like it has tickled me to like make such a weird commitment because I just never know what I'm going to get when I get to the movie theater. So if you have something like that, I implore you to give it a shot. It has been a lot of fun, even if it's forced me to ingest some questionable things into my body along the way.
I have a big question here.
Yes.
Do you get a collectible cup that you get to bring home?
Good
no,
question.
Oh. No, that would make it so good. I wonder if it's for legal reasons, but that stuff is only like tied to the kids' stuff. Plus, also, those are usually like big. And it's like the drinks you're getting are like the sort of like normal, you know, like 12-ounce cocktail thing.
Sure.
So.
Makes sense.
Anyway, that's my waypoint. Go give your money to a corporate tie-in because it's fun.
Great. Good.
Wow.
We all got to get by, you know?
Oh, wow. The one that I got from the Wasp was this bourbon drink. It was excellent. My wife tasted it, and then she got it, too. So it was like double corporate expensive tie-in drink. But
God.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
That was wonderful. Rob, what's your waypoint?
I guess for the last week, I've been watching this show called The Rain, which is
that's that Netflix apocalyptic show with acid rain,
yeah,
right? Yeah, that looked cool when I saw
the
trailer.
If you watch it on Netflix, it will default to the English dub. Don't do the English dub. Make sure you're listening to it in Danish.
There was the other recent like Polish time travel show thingy. That, anyway, I'm going to try and look up. There's something
that
was
is
similar.
Is
sort of
Ministry of... No, that's something else.
No.
I was thinking of Ministerio del Tiempo.
Continue with your description of this movie and or show, and I'll try and find the one I'm thinking
of. Yeah, so The Rain is a post-apocalyptic... Like, I'm going to give you the setup really quickly. This teenage girl and her much younger brother are basically kidnapped by her father and mother out of school. Just like, we got to go. We just got to go. Just leave all your shit. Just get in the fucking car. Stop asking questions. And they drive like hell out of the city. And rain clouds are gathering in the distance. And I thought, we gotta get to shelter before it starts raining. I can't explain what's going on. But in short order, the kids are ensconced in a bunker. Dad leaves. He's like, I gotta go sort this thing out. He's weirdly informed. Like, there's a fully equipped disaster bunker ready for this eventuality. He's weirdly informed about what's up. But meanwhile, the entire planet is getting wiped out by a virus that is being carried in the rain. And you see the kids get sealed in the bunker by themselves for like 6 years. And
Jesus, that's a long time.
Yeah, and the little boy grows up while he's in there, and sister, like, you know, takes care of him, but after 6 years, they're running out of supplies. They have to leave. And they're like, screw it. Let's see what's out in the world. And what's out in the world is complete catastrophe. There's only a handful of people left alive. The world is basically like fallen into ruin. And within about 5 minutes, they are basically abducted by a gang of like teenage survivalists who just like roam around this world just trying to find enough food to eat and enough fresh water to like continue surviving. And the rules of the world are if the rain touches you, you're dead. If you touch a stagnant water, you are dead. And you are hyper-contagious. And so the minute somebody gets touched, your friends will execute you like zombie apocalypse style. Like you're just, you're dead already. You're a danger to the group. And within that, like within that framework, the kids undertake a journey, to escape the disaster zone and see if there's anything out there, for them. See if, you know, that father is still out there and doing whatever he was trying to do. And it's mostly a very, very good show. It's very cool the way it unfolds in a series of like vignettes focusing on one of the kids that you meet in this group. And sort of each of them appears to be a stock character, but of course, as we learn about them, they've all sort of both reinvented themselves in this crisis, but also sort of become trapped by the way you do when you're a teenager. I mean, it's a very good young adult work in some ways. They're also all trapped by the things they project and the things they put out there, and they perform down to the expectations they have created for themselves and that others, like, you know, press upon them. It's pretty. It's very good, stylish, very bleak, very grim. There's one episode that's the biggest fucking clunker you can imagine. Yeah, there's an episode where they find a group of people who are surviving. And seem weirdly prosperous and chill and a little culty, but doesn't seem dangerous. Probably fine. Let's just hang out with these cool cats, and you know, just completely trust that they're on the up and up, and there's no terrible secret lurking here in this maybe cult. Uh-huh. You will figure out what that terrible secret is within like 5 seconds, and you'll hope it's not. It is.
Well,
All so right. It's one bad episode. Out of a run of like I think 10, and they're mostly very very good.
Okay.
All
right.
The show I was thinking of is called Dark.
Yeah.
I don't want to say much about
that's
it.
Compared to Stranger Things, like I already a said lot, too much.
It.
And that was a bad
like,
comparison.
Yes, like there's a shorthand version that's sort of like German Stranger Things, but that really sells the show short. I would highly recommend just go watch the first episode. It's like. Same sort of thing, like dripping with style, really good characters. Like the sci-fi thing that's going on in that show is amazing. But it's also one of those that, like, oh my god, like the dubbing is so atrocious that like make sure you flip on and watch it in the original German with subtitles. That said, I wonder if this is true of this show. We're like, okay, it's hard. If you're not a native speaker and not familiar with the language, can you actually tell if the acting is bad?
I had this problem
and
with
so
Occupy.
I remember tweeting. So I tweeted out that I like really was really enjoying Dark, and like I think said something along the lines of like really enjoying the performances, and like got this like detailed note back that was like this probably doesn't come across in English, but like to someone who's you know non-native, but like it's actually pretty cheesy. It's like I really like the show; it's really good, but like.
That's
I don't
funny.
Think it comes across to English English speaking people that like how the acting is more B movie than you could realize. And I was like, that's such a cool thing to be ignorant of. I think this is some A class acting and it's actually B movie level, but I don't know any better. So I'm just going to sail on through.
Come
but
on.
Your show sounds very similar in tone and approach to Dark. I would recommend that one as well because that's a really, really great show that I enjoyed last year on Netflix as well.
Gotta watch those. Gotta go fast.
Danielle.
I'm watching an anime. I know. I'm as surprised as anybody else.
What are you watching?
My Hero Academia.
Oh, awesome.
Which, nice. You know, I was shown my, life guide, my anime life coach, of course, showed me a few episodes of it like a year ago. And last night, I spent more time with my anime life coach, who I showed me the most recent episodes, so I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah, sure.
And then we went back and watched like five early episodes. Gotcha. And I was like, oh, this is really good. It's just really good. It's awesome.
You want to pitch it at a high level for
sure.
people? Because a lot of people might not
this
know.
This is a world where there's superheroes.
Yeah.
You're super powerful. Whatever, your power is called a quirk. There's a young man who's quirkless, and he is, like, the biggest fan of this guy who's, like, Mr. Blonde, buff, awesome hero who can, you know, jump around and be super strong and do all these great things. His name is All Might. So he's the biggest fan of All Might, and he gets into a sort of a kerfuffle where he does something heroic, even though he has no quirk. And All Might is so taken by this that he decides he's going to mentor this young man into being an amazing superhero. And then he goes to school.
With other
super powerful kids, yeah. Basically. It's just really well done. It's really compelling. I really appreciated it. Yeah, it's really cute. And also the early episodes emphasize hard training, but also taking rest. I was watching this and I was like, wow, this is like me. This is legitimately me as a young athlete, like overtraining and hurting themselves. Like, yeah, I did that.
There you go.
It's very good.
Thank you for bringing anime to the podcast. I really appreciate
it. Quick thing. Is the art?
I know you expected it
Would
from
you
me.
Say the art yes. style is, my frame of reference here, is it like hyper-dramatic action manga-esque, like vivid detail, lurid? Is it gorgeous and painterly the way Yuri is? Is it more like chibi, like caricature-esque portrayals?
My frame of reference being only the things that Amanda has shown me. So, like, I have watched five anime series in my life. Towards the first, like pretty exaggerated comic booky manga looking, but it's not gross. It's not, you know, it's not gauche, I suppose I would say. Like, it is exaggerated and superhero-y and comic booky, but I would call it pleasantly so, as opposed to, like, overly 10 levels over the top. Personally,
right.
That's where I would put it.
The thing that I think is super interesting is that they use different styles for different characters, right? Like, not incompatible styles, but something like, if you look up All Might, you'll note that, like, All Might's eyes are, like, completely blacked out or like, just, like, super heavy shading. Like, almost so you can see the comic book style pencil shading that's going on there, whereas other characters will be, like, completely, like, no extra lines on their face, just the outline of their face, and then big, you know, bold eyes or something like that, that were, like, very, very cute faces. And so it's, like, it's willing to dip into a bunch of different styles visually.
All Might appears to be, like, very old school anime, like,
yes, like
art
almost
style.
80s, like, yes, totally. So there's, you know, there's a lot of cool characters out there.
There are. So. I'm starting to meet some of them.
Welcome to anime.
To the anime bus.
Finally. All right, I think on that note, that's going to do it for us this week or this day. We'll be back on, I guess, probably not on Wednesday for anything, right? We don't have a bonus pod this week now. We were going to record a bonus pod today, but that
probably
won't happen
not.
This week. All right, but we'll be back on Friday for another episode of Waypoint Radio. We'll be back pretty much every morning this week with some more stuff. We'll be streaming some No Man's Sky this week. We'll be streaming some Bloodborne this week.
Oh, yeah.
We'll find even more things to stream. There's
no
all
man's
sorts
blood.
Of things. No Man's Blood. Not allowed. Weird. Okay. where can people find you on the internet, Danielle?
At Danielle R.I. Maybe tweeting about anime. You might see some
There you
of
go.
That.
How about you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
Patrick Klepek.
At Patrick Klepek.
Follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Follow everything Waypoint does, Twitter.com/Waypoint, Facebook.com/Waypoint Vice, YouTube.com/Waypoint Vice, Twitch.tv/Waypoint. Waypoint.vice.com is the address where you can go check out all the news stories and articles and criticism and op-eds and what else also goes there. Blogging.
So we have pretty
art. Art goes there. What else do we put there?
We put
words.
The podcast
various
there too.
Podcast is listenable there. There's a long list of things that should hyperlinks go
links
on there.
Links to the forum?
Color. Links to our social media in case you need to know where those are. I know there's nowhere else to know what that is. Our about page. If you want to know more about us, you can go to waypoint.advice.com and find an about page there. I don't know if it's / about or not because
– we have one?
Yeah, totally, because that's where our pitching instructions are.
Oh, right.
Austin, you sure you don't want to tell people what they'll find if they open up the CSS view and just sort of take a look at the underlying style of the site?
Oh boy.
Yeah, sure. You know, I can go in. I can go in there and just go hit the inspect page real quick. And you know, you know what? I'll leave it. That's a surprise.
JavaScript.
They'll find a lot of JavaScript. They'll find that you can no longer right-click images and save them as images. They get saved as webums instead.
Yep.
That's a thing you'll notice.
Oh, yeah. You got a webum.
Mm. You got a webum, and you got a webum. Got
to keep them webum rated.
That's going to do it for us. Thanks to Bowen for letting us track. Well. Miss you. Off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that. Waypoint.zone/BOEN. We'll be back on Friday. Until then.
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
An Offspring reference in 2018.
Is that what that was?
It doesn't even go.
Connor and I the other day both had like a gotta keep them separated. And then
okay, I got it.
The secret to summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil, clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Its signature scent of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com.